The following podcast is brought to you by Newfie EVP, Talking with the Dead in Newfoundland. Jump on Amazon.ca today and get your free sample of the best-selling ebook in Unexplained Mysteries. Ebenezer
Scrooge. Go away!
Merry Christmas, you filthy animal. And a Happy New Year.
By the way, congratulate me this Christmas. I'm going for it. No antidepressants.
Somebody ought to teach that little humbug some Christmas spirit.
I could feel the Christmas noose beginning to tighten. Maybe what happened next was inevitable.
Ralphie, what would you like for Christmas?
Horrified, I heard myself blurted out.
I want an official Red Ryder carbine action 200 yard range ball air rifle.
Ooh.
No. Shoot your eye out.
Now, what do you call this, Edith, huh?
That was a Christmas present.
What fathead to spend any money on a thing like that?
From your mother.
I must find some way to keep Christmas from coming.
That's what Christmas is all about, Charlie Brown.
It's the odd to Newfoundland. Ghostly greetings from your host, Jonathan. Mysteries, ghosts, monsters and lore. East Coast esoterica and so much more. If it's up to you, friend, it's on the up to Newfoundland.
Ghostly greetings from the oldest city in North America. I'm your host, John Mallard, bringing you the best in East Coast esoterica. You, my friends, have stumbled upon the Odd the Newfoundland Paranormal Podcast for the month of December 2015. And it's a very hairy Squatchmas. Oh, yeah. A little later in the show, I'll be joined by none other than Eric Altman. How exciting is that? Eric's a wonderful guest, and of course, you can listen to Eric every Sunday night on Beyond the Edge Radio. Just look him up online. He's not hard to find. Guys, the Christmas season is upon us, and I just want to say how thankful I am to each and every one of my listeners. My podcast has done nothing but grow in 2015, and one of the best things about this is it's the same product it was a year ago. It's you guys, my guests and my listeners, who are growing my podcast at an insane rate. I couldn't think of a better Christmas gift for yours truly than to see something he loves so very much as the Odd the Newfoundland Paranormal Podcast not grow 10%, not grow 50%, not grow 100%, not grow 200%. My listenership has grown 300% since last year. How just humbling is that? To me, it means the world, and I want you guys to know, for all my loyal listeners out there, and for anybody who might be tuning in for the first time, thank you so much for letting me be part of your life, even if it is only for about an hour every single month. Guys, I do have to bring down the happy tone. As you know, I am a huge Christmas sook. My whole family is. We love it very, very much. And I say Merry Christmas. Perhaps you guys say something else, but I just want to say Happy Holidays to everybody out there. But I do have to bring it down a notch because, unfortunately, Newfoundland has lost a legend since last time I was actually on this. And, you know, I think it's important that we pay tribute because the legendary Ron Hines, yeah, the man of 1,000 songs, has passed away. But in his wake, he left a little paranormal story. Friends, fellow performers, and all of Newfoundland and Labrador sharing memories of legendary singer-songwriter Ron Hines, who passed away weeks ago. Hines, known as the Man of 1,000 Songs, had been battling cancer. He died in hospital in St. John's at the age of 64. Greg Malone, who played in the wonderful Grand Band with Hines, said he was just about to go on stage for a show after getting the news Thursday night when the power went out downtown St. John's. All over. Malone said two other bandmates, Sandy Morris and Paul Boomer Stamp, were also getting ready for a separate show just across the street. Just after Ron died, downtown St. John's was plunged into darkness for an hour. Shows were canceled and his three old bandmates were prevented from performing that night, Malone told CBC St. John's Morning Show. It was just like surreal. I was greatly relieved. I really was. I didn't realize how upset I was, he added, joking that Hines did him a favor. It's so appropriate for the lights to go out in St. John's in honor of Ron. Newfoundland Power said Thursday's power outage, which affected 1,700 customers in downtown St. John's, was a result of equipment failure caused by a freak pole fire. Of course, Hines announced in late October he was battling cancer, but this time it had spread to his hip and lung. In 2013, Hines said he was pronounced cancer-free after undergoing treatment for throat cancer. The man of 1,000 songs, singer of one of my favorite songs, Sonny's Dream. Boy, oh boy, it was a sad loss for Newfoundland, but I'm so glad that in his wake, we got this strange little story of the power being shut down in downtown St. John's, causing all the other band members who he once took the stage with not being able to play just for an hour. I think that is just the weirdest thing. Absolutely the weirdest thing. And to his family, and if there are anybody out there who's related to Ron, who may get a chance to hear this podcast, I just want to say how very much I love that guy. He was a great singer. And let me tell you, his song has been very popular at my cabin in Holyrood, Sonny's Dream. A lot of people used to sing it on guitars up there, so I know Ron through his music quite well. Now, with that being said, it is time to get to the paranormal news. Yeah, the Christmas edition. Haul up your stockings, dust off the reindeer, because we got some really weird ones to share with you tonight. Besides, of course, the old Ron Hahn shutting down the power. The first thing I'm going to talk about is the Force. Yeah, you know it and I know it. As excited as we are for Christmas and presents, we're all just a little bit excited about the new Star Wars movie as well, hey? I don't know about you, but every single time I see, like, just any of that cast members, I just freak out. I'm so happy. But apparently, there may be some Force being used in China, because there's actually a bizarre clip going around showing cars levitating in China. Several vehicles were mysteriously forced up into the air as they approached a busy road junction. The bizarre video, which was recorded in the city of Xingtai, captured the moment that a car was suddenly pulled violently upwards in the air before slamming down on the road again. At around the same time, two other cars can also be seen experiencing the same phenomena. Since appearing online, the video has gone viral with many internet users speculating over what could have possibly caused the vehicles to fly up in the air like that. The answer, as it turns out, lies in a large steel cable that had fallen down on the road. The truck on the right can be seen snagging the cable and pulling it tight, lifting the cars as they drove over it. Now, that steel cable lifted three cars. I'm telling you, you can't see it in this video at all. There's no steel cable there. You won't be able to see it when you watch the video. So it just looks literally like Luke Skywalker, or dare I even say it, Lord Vader himself, waved his hand and lifted these cars up with the Force. That's what it looks like to me. All I know is that's a really weird, weird visual. You guys got to check it out. So just jump on YouTube. It's there. Just look up Bizarre Clip or Levitating Cars in China. I'm sure it'll probably come up in the news feed. It's definitely gone viral by now. Makes you kind of wonder what lengths people will go to get a rise out of people. But you know what? You haven't got to have the Force to be able to create or do weird things. And I'm going to tell you, this next story is probably the cheesiest story I'm ever going to share with you, guy. An artist creates nativity scene out of cheese. Merry Cheesemas, folks. A UK artist has sculpted an entire nativity scene using only a cocktail stick and some cheddar cheese. Cheese might not be the first material that springs to mind when it comes to sculpting, but for Prudence State, an artist commissioned by the Pilgrim's Choice Cheese Company, a block of cheddar can prove to be a surprisingly versatile alternative to conventional modeling clay. The nativity scene, which features the intricately detailed figures of Jesus, Mary, Joseph, and the three wise men, was crafted over the course of 5 days and used over 6 pounds of cheese. We wanted to have some fun and create an ultimate Christmas nativity scene from our mature cheddar cheese, said Pilgrim's Choice Company spokesman. Now, what's even better than this, now this story is actually coming from unexplainedmysteries.com, by the way. They got some great news articles there. But I just got to read some of the comments about that story, because, like, it's probably the best part. So I'm just going to throw this out there, okay? Okay, here comes one post from, this is a post from T.C. Graham, okay, you ready? It is indeed quite the display, but as you stated, I would like to hear that she did not waste all that cheese. Bad Chad B33 writes, where's the crackers? Mark Wan writes, now, I'm all in support of cheese-related developments, but I've always preferred the biscuit nativity scene. Oh, man, oh, man. All I know is that if you get a chance to check out this nativity scene, it is so intricately detailed, guys. It's probably one of the most wildest things I've ever seen. I've seen many, many clay sculptures and stuff like this, but this is just highly detailed. Like, you could see the hairs on the backs of some of the animals in that stable. So, you should check it out. So, just look it up. It's on YouTube as well. Look up a nativity scene made of cheese and have yourself a very merry Cheesemus. Oh, God. You know, when I think of cheese, maybe somebody out there is thinking the same way, but I got to think of that horrible Batman movie with Arnold Schwarzenegger as Mr. Freeze, okay? It was by far the worst movie I've ever seen. God love him for trying, but man, oh man, what a terrible, terrible show. Well, Batman beware, we may be one step closer to having a real Freeze Ray. A breakthrough in the field of laser cooling could open the door to a wide range of new applications. Ever since it was first developed back in the 1960s, the Humble Laser has been most typically associated with heating things up rather than cooling them down. Now, however, researchers of the University of Washington have revealed that they may have actually found a way to do both, something that had previously eluded scientists for decades. While there is still a long way to go before the technology is likely to become widely available, the researchers maintain that cooling lasers could soon find their way into many different applications. The ability to point cool small areas, for instance, has the potential to be highly beneficial, especially in the field of medical research where it could be used to cool and slow down individual cells or to silence a single neuron within a network without causing damage. The technology could also be used to cool down individual components inside a computer chip. Or cue horrible Mr. Freeze quotes from Batman and Robin.
Tonight's forecast, a freeze is coming. Allow me to break the ice. You are not sending me to the cooler. Freeze well. What killed the dinosaurs? The Ice Age. Stay cool, bird boy. Let's kick some ice.
Show some mercy.
I'm afraid that my condition has left me cold to your pleas of mercy. No! All right, everyone. Chill. It's a cold town. Cool party. Can you be cold, Batman? Chill to perfection. Revenge is a dish best of cold. Winter has come at last. Freeze. Freeze. Ice. Freeze. Ice.
Winter fiber.
Frozen. Icy. Freeze. Winter ice.
Ice. Freeze. Winter. Winter.
Freeze. Cold. Frosty.
So there you have it, folks. We've got Ron Hines is passing and the power going out, with levitating cars in China, a nativity scene made out of cheese, and of course, the world's very first freeze ray. All of these stories have been odd to Newfoundland.
The Odd to Newfoundland Paranormal podcast does not accept donations. In lieu of this, the Stella Burry Foundation is a registered charity established in 2005 to secure financial support for the work of Stella's Circle. Learn more and please give generously at stellaburry.ca. And now, back to the show.
And welcome back to the Odd to Newfoundland Paranormal podcast. Tonight's guest has many, many years in the woods. His research and work has been featured in all media outlets, including books, magazines, and countless newspaper interviews.
He's been interviewed in a plethora of radio programs and featured in numerous television programs as well. He's the co-founder of Beyond the Edge Radio, which has been on the air for 8 years, and before you know, will be 9. He's here to put the cryptid in Christmas, because when I think of Sasquatch, Bigfoot, Yeti, or Yowie, I think of Pennsylvania's own Eric Altman. Eric, welcome to the Odd the Newfoundland Paranormal Podcast.
Thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
Listen, Eric, first and foremost, I just got to say, I'm really excited because finally I got somebody on my show to talk about cryptids, and in particular Bigfoot tonight. It's never happened. My show is about a year and a half old, and I just have dodged the Yeti bullet, so to speak.
Well, I'm glad to be here and happy to talk cryptids with you tonight.
I'm super excited. So first and foremost, Eric, I'd like to think that we all have a backstory of some sort, you know? we don't just get born into, shall we say, going out into the woods and looking for large, hairy, hominid, bipedal animals. How did this begin? Was this a childhood thing, or was this something you did in your later years? How did this come about? How did you become a Bigfoot hunter?
Yeah, it goes back to my early childhood, around the age of 9 or 10. I was a big fan of sci-fi and horror films, the B-type movies that were out, and I happened to catch a couple of them that had to deal with cryptids, one of them being Creature from Black Lake, the other being Legend of Boggy Creek. And those are pretty much the catalyst that got me involved in looking into the phenomenon. I really wanted to find out if there was any truth to these stories that were supposedly based on true stories, true encounters. And from there, I started educating myself and reading anything I could get my hands on related to cryptids or, you know, the paranormal or anything like that. So that's really where it all started for me.
Awesome. You know, it's interesting. You know, the backstory sometimes, shall we say, kind of paints the picture, you know? Here's somebody who, instead of just automatically going out into the woods, we'll say, actually has a background and a common interest. And I think that's really important for anybody who's into the paranormal in any faucet, really. You know, we just don't someday get up and say, you know what, I'm going to go hunt ghosts, or, you know what, I'm going to go hunt Nessie. It just kind of, it's always kind of been on the back burner in your life, eh?
Yeah, it's always been something that I've been fascinated with and had an interest in. And before I jumped into the field, I didn't get into the field until 1997. But before that, I really wanted to, you know, find out what other people were doing. If there were people out there investigating it, what they were finding. Try to educate myself and learn as much as I could before getting into the field, because I think that's very important, that you have some kind of education or background into what you're going to look into instead of just jumping in feet first, because you'll make a lot more mistakes if you don't know what you're doing.
Absolutely. And, you know, it's too bad there isn't, you know, a Bigfoot school, we'll say. I know one thing. As someone who's a paranormal investigator, I would kill to go to, like, Paranormal Investigation University. Because, like, we desperately need it in our field. That's for sure. Tell me a little tiny bit about your own research. You know, I can imagine you've been doing this for how many years now?
Going on close to 19 years now in the field.
Oh, my God.
Getting cases.
Almost.
I've looked into probably close to 300 claims and reports of encounters and sightings and track finds and evidence discovery, that sort of thing. I've been all over the country looking into cases and doing field work, mainly here in the East Coast of Pennsylvania, Ohio, Maryland, surrounding states, but I have traveled across the country looking into claims and stuff like that. So I've been doing this a long time, and I still don't know everything there is to know, so it still keeps me motivated to keep looking for answers.
Of course, of course. And you know, I'm glad there's somebody like you out there who's heavily involved in all kinds of facets of the paranormal. You know, like Beyond the Edge Radio, you know, I'm a binge podcast listener. I'm that guy. When I turn on TuneIn Radio, I just let the playlist go, and I listen to a lot of people talk, and I'm glad that there's somebody out there who's vocal. You know what I mean? I got a hunch there's actually a lot of Bigfoot hunters out there who probably don't come forward with their own experiences.
There are some that do, and not some of the older researchers that have been around for a while. Most of them just kind of do their own thing, and they don't really get out there in the public eye. I was kind of thrust into it because for about 15 years I ran a Bigfoot organization here in Pennsylvania, so I was always the guy out front, you know, waving the banner of our group, and that's how people got to know me. But I've always been interested in the paranormal and all facets and all topics related to the paranormal. So, I mean, it kind of makes sense for me to do a podcast or a radio show like Beyond the Edge that looks into all facets.
That's awesome. And another thing, too, like when I listen to you, you're very open-minded on the idea of what Bigfoot actually is. You know, I've heard you take calls before. And you've always said the same things. I'm not really sure. But I like to think that after almost two decades of research, you may have an idea of what you're dealing with. So go ahead, lay it on me. I would love to hear what you, in your own opinion, a Bigfoot is.
You already answered your question. I'm really not sure what a Bigfoot is because we don't have a specimen, alive or dead, to study. And all we have are anecdotal evidence coming in from eyewitnesses. We've got thousands and thousands of eyewitness testimony, cases and reports coming in. We've got footprint discovery. So it's obviously some kind of physical being that's leaving tracks in the ground, but we just don't know exactly what it is yet. And that's what makes it such a fascinating mystery. There's so many different aspects to it. And as of late, there's been twists and turns thrown into it with the paranormal and interdimensional aspects of it. And as you said, I'm very open-minded because we don't know what this animal is. We've been looking into this phenomenon for over 6 years now, and no one's come up with a specimen yet. No one's come up with conclusive proof that this thing is real. This thing may not even exist. It may be just a myth going on for literally hundreds of years. But I think there's enough anecdotal and enough circumstantial evidence out there to keep investigators like myself looking and trying to find the answers.
Yeah. Eric, tell me, you know, how do you feel about all these TV shows? You know, me, I'm a ghost hunter myself. I'm actually really into electronic voice phenomena, but that's beside the point. I know that what I watch on TV is not necessarily how my paranormal investigations go. We'll just leave it at that. What is your opinion on these shows that come on TV? Do they really reflect what actual Bigfoot investigations are like, or is it much like the, shall we say, ghost hunting type thing where it's kind of dramatized for TV and whatnot?
Well, the shows are designed to draw in viewers and can get ratings. So they're going to be over-dramatized and there's going to be a lot of sensationalism with them. A lot of what's shown on these shows aren't really what happens when you do investigations, whether it be paranormal or Bigfoot or cryptid investigations, because you know as well as I do, there are many, many times, countless times, where you go to investigate a cave and nothing happens. There's no evidence collected. You sit in like a dark house or the dark forest for hours. You may hear a coyote or an owl or a bear growl or something to that effect, but it's not a Bigfoot. And it's just a very rare occasion when something paranormal or cryptid-related happens. And people don't want to tune into a show week after week and just see a guy sitting in the woods hoping that something happens and nothing does. They want to see results. They want to hear the wood knocking or the howls or the scream or the shadow move across the wall or, you know, a knock on the wall or something like that, the EVP. They want something to happen right then and there. And in order to do that each and every week, they have to over-dramatize things and sensationalize things to keep the viewer coming back to the show. So a lot of these shows that are out there, like Mountain Monsters, Alaska Monsters, even Finding Bigfoot, I'm very close friends with the guys on the show. I love them to death, but they'll even tell you it's not for Bigfoot researchers. It's for the general public who are fans of the topic. And that's what it's all about. It's entertainment. So that's the way I look at it.
And you know what? I got no problem with that whatsoever as long as people know that. Do you know what I mean?
Right. Well, I do too. But the problem is the general public doesn't necessarily know what goes into Bigfoot research or paranormal research or UFO research. They see it as just these guys going out there and you know, every case something happens. And you and I know that's not the case. It's actually very dull and it can be very stagnant at times. But the general public doesn't see that. They only see the sensationalism and they think it's all glamour and glitz when it's really not.
You know, one of the things that always shocked me when I think about us as humans, we'll say, and when it comes to our lineage, you know, one of the biggest downplays from science, in my opinion, is the idea that there's a missing link out there. And, you know, I think about that when I think about Bigfoot, of course. I mean, it's tall, it's dark, it's hairy, it walks on two legs, it's a lot like us, it would seem. You know, one of the biggest downplays is this idea that we have a missing link, when in reality, we are missing thousands of links in our ancestry. Do you think Bigfoot might be one of those links?
It's very possible. They make amazing discoveries every year. They come up with a new hominid that's closely related to us, or closely related to primates, that fits into that chain somewhere. They just did one recently in Africa. So they're always making discoveries, and possibly one day they'll make a discovery which can relate a Bigfoot or tie a Bigfoot into our lineage. At this point, anything's possible, and I keep an open mind and just try to go with the flow.
Gotcha. You know, I've got an ex-girlfriend who fits the criteria. I'm not kidding.
I think we all do.
Who? Wow. So we're both in really, really deep trouble after this podcast. Better move on to my next question. Eric, okay. So like you mentioned earlier, 20 years. Man, that's a long time to put in on something, buddy. A long, long time. What in the last 20 years is probably the most compelling piece of data you yourself have captured when it comes to really any cryptid? You know, I'd like to think that the holy grail for a paranormal investigator, will say, who's after, say, ghosts, would probably be the full-body apparition. You know what I mean? What was probably the most compelling thing you've ever come across?
Personal experience would have to be the closest thing. I've found tracks. And unfortunately, I can't say what left the track because I didn't see it. I've heard things in the woods that I can't explain, and I don't have a rational thought when it comes to matching that sound to a known animal. I just haven't been able to do it, so I don't know. It's an unknown, and I have to leave it at that. But the personal experiences have probably been the best evidence that I've collected, just because I'm there. I can physically witness it, see it, hear it, smell it. You know, if it's a footprint, I can feel it with my hand, put my hand in the ground and feel those impressions in the ground. So it's the personal experience for me that is the best data that I've collected over the past 20 years.
Yes. And notice how when I asked, I never said evidence, I said data. Right. We still just do not know. Now, I know Bigfoot really is the thing with you. I know that. That's your major thing. But you've branched out into many parts of cryptozoology. One in particular was the Thunderbird, right?
Yeah, being from Pennsylvania, we've had a number of Thunderbird sightings over the past couple of decades. Now, I don't go out and investigate cases on a regular basis because I don't get many Thunderbird cases sent to me. But when I do, or some of the associates I work with get a case and they expect me to come along, I'm very interested to get out there in the field and see if there's anything to it. And that goes with any cryptid, whether it be a Mothman sighting, a Thunderbird sighting, whether it be a Chupacabra sighting, whatever it is, I want to find out if there's something to it, because it definitely piques my interest. But as you said, my main forte is Bigfoot research, and that's what I'm pretty much known for. So I get the Bigfoot reports. But anything cryptid-related, I'll be happy to look into, because I am just interested in those subjects as I am the Bigfoot topic.
And, you know, it's really interesting, really, the topic of cryptozoology. I mean, I love it myself, mainly because Newfoundland is actually where one of the first ever cryptids were actually discovered, which was the giant squid. It washed up on our shores, and it was major, major news when it happened many years ago. And, you know, up until then, the Kraken or giant squid didn't exist. Lo and behold, it washes up on our shores, and now it's in our museum. So, there you go. Do you think, you know, by now there would have been a body, though, for a Bigfoot? You know, a lot of people have talked to me about, you know, the idea of Bigfoot maybe being a dimensional being, much like a spirit, or maybe even have their own burial grounds. What do you think your idea is around the idea of a Bigfoot body?
Well, that's what makes this mystery so fascinating, is because there isn't a physical specimen, live or dead. We have not been able to capture one to prove it conclusively. People have claimed they've shot Bigfoot over the years. They claim they've captured Bigfoot over the years, so they've found a dead body. And the government mysteriously comes in and whisks it away, or the men in black show up and take it. You know, you always hear these stories, but there's never anything to back up these claims. That's what makes the mystery fascinating, is because after 60 years of investigators going out there and checking out these claims, we have no physical proof that Bigfoot is real. So I can't sit here and tell you Bigfoot it does exist. We only have these eyewitness testimony, and we know eyewitness testimony can be flawed. People can misidentify things, or they call it pareidolia. That happens. But there's too much conclusive circumstantial evidence, if you want to call it that, or anecdotal evidence. There's too much of that to deny that there's something to this phenomenon. I'm convinced 100% that there is something going on. There's people seeing something. Just what it is to me, it's still a mystery.
And you know what? The day it stops being a mystery, Eric, is probably the day you'll hang up your Bigfoot finding gear. I mean, I wouldn't want that to happen. I love the idea that we can go out there and still investigate and look for these parts of the paranormal that just fascinate us, you know? One thing, you know, that always strikes me, I always think back to the old In Search of show with Leonard Nimoy. I always think back, God rest his soul, and I think back to watching the Patterson-Gimlin film. What's your opinion on that?
Well, the Patterson-Gimlin film was an interesting footage. Unfortunately, it's still inconclusive. There's been many documentaries and scientists and skeptics who've all come forward and said their claims, it's either legit or it's a guy in a suit or it's staged. You know, I've heard all the different sides of the story. The only two people that really know are Roger Patterson and Bob Gimlin, who were there that day, and of course Patton, who was in the film. Those are the three individuals who know for sure if that film is legitimate or not. I find it fascinating. I've had the pleasure and honor to talk with Bob Gimlin on many occasions. I actually was able to sit down with him for about 2 hours and have a lengthy discussion with him about the film. And he's a very believable, very honest person. I have no doubts that he saw what he claims he saw. But unfortunately, his sighting, his experience is just that. It was an experience. He has no physical evidence to back up his claim other than a film. And at this point, we don't know for sure. I remain kind of on the fence. And until we have a body that we can match up to what's in the film, then there's always going to be doubt.
Gotcha. You know, and doubt there definitely is. You know, we have seen just really in the last 6 years just an immense amount of people and hoaxes. It's just unreal. And I'm so glad there's someone like you out there, Eric, who keeps that level head and has that skeptical eye. You know what I mean? You know, as much as we believe that this could be possible, we still will not say it's definitely 100% out there, right?
Right. Yeah, I try to keep a rational, objective view of the subject, or any of the subjects I investigate, because I don't like to assume things until I know 100% and there's physical evidence or hard evidence to back up my statement. If I have that and I can prove, you know, through testing and repeat testing that here it is, here's the evidence, this backs up my claim, I'm not going to make that claim. So I'm the same way with eyewitness testimony. Yes, the person may be sincere and believe what they saw. I may believe they believe what they saw. That doesn't prove to me that, you know, what they saw was a Bigfoot or a cryptid. I've got to see physical evidence. And over the years, I've become a little more skeptical than I'd like to be, because I really would like to think there's something out there, but I just haven't been impressed with what's come down the pike.
I understand that 100%, Eric. You know what? When I first started paranormal investigating, everything was a ghost. I was so excited to go out. I'd pump myself full of coffee and I had my batteries ready to go. I was so excited. I was like a little kid at Christmas. And then 4 years later, I'm like, I had to go back to this museum again and sit in the dark for 8 hours. Yay. You know, maybe we've become a little tiny bit, jaded over the years. But you know what? That's a big part of growing up, hey? As any kind of researcher would know. Talk to me a little tiny bit about Beyond the Edge Radio. You know, like, I know that's a passion of yours. You're on every week, aren't you?
Yeah, we're on Sunday nights from 8 to 10 p.m. Eastern Time. And as you mentioned earlier, we just celebrated our 8th season on the air, starting our 9th year. Matter of fact, our 9th year started this past Sunday. I come from a background in broadcasting and radio. I worked in radio before I got to Beyond the Edge, and I went to school for it. I worked commercial radio, so I really enjoyed it and had a passion for that. Unfortunately, unfortunately, there's no money to be made in commercial radio unless you're in a big time market, like Howard Stern, for example, or Imus, one of the big name, you know, radio personalities. So I wasn't able to make a living at it and continue to do it full time. So unfortunately, I had to give up my dream of doing that. But in 2007, when we started BTE Radio, I was able to combine my passions of the paranormal and all 14 topics and things that are strange and unusual, along with radio, which I love. And then we put the two together, Sean Forker and I did. I came up with the concept of, you know, having a paranormal talk show, because at that time there weren't very many of them. There were a handful at most. And before you knew it, there's literally hundreds, if not thousands, of paranormal podcast shows. And we're just glad to still be on the air and still doing what we enjoy doing.
How is the Fork Chop, anyhow?
He's doing good. He's doing good. He's got his own show now. Arcane Radio, I believe it's called, with Lon Strickler on Sunday nights, or on Monday nights. And yeah, they're doing good.
That's great. You know, it's interesting. Over the years, you know, I listen to you guys talk on your own show, just like many people out there who listen to my podcast do. And I always tell people, have an open mind and listen to everybody, because you know what? When something big in the paranormal happens, it's all over these podcasts. It's awesome. It's a great way to really keep an eye on the research, believe it or not.
Oh, it is, yeah.
You know, you're heading into year 9 with Beyond the Edge Radio. So I'm not going to be able to talk you into writing that book or finishing it. I'm going to try one more time, though. Please write your book.
I've had a lot of people over the years on me about writing a book, and I've taken a couple of different directions. I have a book about halfway written on the Bigfoot phenomenon of Pennsylvania, and I put that aside because I must have ADHD or ADD or something, because I get into it, and then I just walk away, and I get, you know, oh, look, it's a squirrel. My attention gets diverted. And being as busy as I am with the radio show and doing investigations and lecturing and all that stuff keeps me busy, family life, work, and I just haven't had time to finish it. So I thought, well, maybe I could put some focus into writing a book on just cryptids. There really weren't very many books on cryptids, but then all of a sudden everybody got the bug to write a book about cryptids, and there's like hundreds of books about cryptids now. So that fell through. And so I'm kicking around the idea of maybe starting up writing again, as if I can get the time to do it.
Nah. Well, I wrote a book. And I can 100% understand where you're coming from. I literally had to lock myself away for like, oh my God, it was at least 6 weeks where I just had no social life whatsoever. It was me and my cat, and that was about it. Now, you can probably relate to that anyway. how was Paz, by the way? Everything okay?
Yeah, I think he's in the bedroom recovering. He had a rough day at the vet today.
Oh, you know, we got to love animals of all sorts. Even if they are mythological, we still got to love our little kitties and dogs too, right?
That's right. Yep.
Eric, tell me a little tiny bit about your future, man. Like, where is this all headed to? Do you think you'll be keep doing the whole cryptozoology thing for many years to come? Or do you think you're going to focus more on your radio show? Like, do you have any idea where you might be heading the next, say, 3 or 4 years?
Honestly, I just feel what the day takes me. There are days when I get the bug to get out in the woods, and I'm out quite often, as often as I can be. There are days when the radio show takes over, and like tonight I've got to edit the show from this past Sunday, do an edit for the past 2 hours of for sound quality and content. So it just whatever the day takes me. And to be honest with you, I don't know where I'm going to be in 3 or 4 years. When I started this back in 1997, dating myself, when I started this in 97, I didn't expect to be here in 2015 doing a podcast show about the past 18, 19 years of research that I've done. I just kind of take things one day at a time now. If a case comes along and it's intriguing, I'll go check it out. If I get a phone call from fellow associates or researchers who want to hit the woods, then I'm heading out if I've got nothing going on. Sunday nights I do the radio show. I do a lot of prep work during the week, so a lot of it takes up a lot of my time, and you know, lecturing too, going to different events and stuff like that. So it keeps me busy.
The one thing I've noticed is that you do get out quite a bit with people, and I think it's great that you share that experience of what it's like to hunt for Bigfoot in the woods. You know, Eric, where do you see Bigfoot research heading? You know, I personally, right now, and you know, the whole ghost hunting or paranormal investigation portion, we'll say, around the world right now, it's just, it's out of control. It's all over the place. It's just, it's not a very happy place right now. There's no doubt. But where do you see Bigfoot research heading to?
The same direction, honestly.
Yeah.
The TV shows that have come out have brought a lot of attention and focus to the Bigfoot subject, which is great. It really kind of takes away the veil, so to speak, from the eyewitnesses who are afraid to come forward and share their experiences. So it's less taboo to talk about. It's less taboo to share experiences. And that's a great thing. But now everybody wants to be a Bigfoot researcher. It's like Bigfoot is the cool thing to do now. Ghost hunting was cool a few years ago, and it rode the wave, and it's starting to kind of crescendo and go down a little bit. Cryptozoology is becoming the big thing now with all these different cryptid TV shows. Next thing, it'll be the UFO, and then back to ghost hunting again. It runs in cycles.
Awesome. Hopefully I'll still be there.
Yeah. Well, I think the diehards, the people who are really into it for the research and to learn, those are the people that are going to be there. The people who are fly-by-night, they're thrill-seekers, they want to get their scare on, I don't think they'll be around much longer. Once they find out there's real work involved in it, there's real commitment involved in it, they'll kind of back off and, you know, maybe go on to do something else. But those who are committed to it, those who are have the passion and the desire to really know, will still stick with it. And I think those guys and women will be there at the end when, you know, the mystery's solved.
And you know what? Someday, we pray that all these mysteries will be. But then again, there'd be no fun then in the paranormal, though. You know what? I'm going to say this only once to you. I'm going to say it, and I got to say it loud and clear. Very merry Squatchmas to you, Eric Altman. Thank you so much for being on my podcast, and I hope to have you back someday, bud.
Well, thanks for having me, Jonathan. I appreciate it. Happy holidays to you and yours.
Thank you.
Well, the time to say goodbye is upon us. But don't worry, you can keep track of the Odd Newfoundland Paranormal Podcast very easily. It's available on Stitcher, iTunes, Podbean, and TuneIn Radio. Just look for the Odd Newfoundland Paranormal Podcast banner. Of course, if you'd like to keep up to date, you can always check out the Odd Newfoundland Paranormal Podcast Facebook page, drop a like, and every single time a new show goes up, you'll be notified. You can also follow me, John Mallard, on Twitter, at ODDTONFLD. That's Odd to Newfoundland. Get your latest news on the podcast as well as the ever popular parajoke of the day. From the oldest city in North America, I bid you adieu from the Odd to Newfoundland Paranormal Podcast.